The following is a Rest Strategies attempted humor. Rest Strategies is a PR firm, not a humor firm. The following may not be funny at all. We can't tell. Someone tell us. Bob Olson is an extremely funny and, more importantly, talented voiceover pro. He is a constant professional who delivers outstanding work for his clients. We are all jealous of Bob. Bob is amazing. You should hire Bob. Hire Bob at bobsvoice.net. We hope Bob will come back for more Cold Oatmeal, a podcast by the Rest Strategies team about PR and public affairs that is clearly not worthy of Bob's talents.
Okay, Chris, thanks for stopping by. Chris Harkins is joining us today in the Cold Oatmeal podcast studios. Chris, did you happen to catch our last episode with Bob?
I did.
Bob's a friend of yours, right?
Bob is a good friend, yeah.
Yeah, he came recommended by the whale's wife to be a guest, but I'm not sure it panned out the way we
were. I was just kind of underwhelmed. I mean,
it said professional on his website.
Yeah, and I mean, he came in, there's all these accolades, and he's a great golfer. Great golfer, apparently.
Oh, yeah,
Well, and I asked him for help with my voice, and listen, I still sound the same.
Yeah, no, you sound awful.
And thanks. I'm not used to your voice. I mean, he told me to get used to your voice. I haven't yet.
So. I wasn't sure listening back because I missed the taping with a sick kid, but I wasn't sure listening back what the big deal was all about. I could do what he did. I'm doing it right now.
It's true.
Well, I guess that's kind of what we're hoping. We would like to try to get something good here.
Yeah, it would just, he left and we were not pleased with what we got. And it's, you know, this is important. So we want to do, we want to get something better.
Yeah, and it came up, your name came up in the recording.
I'm aware. Yeah,
because, you know, I know that you've got some aspirations and some natural talents in this. So we're hoping maybe we could get the script to you and you could maybe give it a go for us.
Sure. Why hire a professional when you can find yourself a hack, right?
We said that exact thing.
I think so.
So
I think anytime. That's what so Matt said every time he hired every single one of us.
You're looking at the room right here. So anytime, go ahead. You're ready.
Okay, sure. Welcome to Cold Oatmeal, a podcast from the Resch Strategies team about PR and public affairs. Really?
Nailed it.
Gold.
Dazzling.
Excellent.
I think it was perfect.
Okay, let's go.
Welcome to Cold Oatmeal, a podcast from the Resch Strategies team about PR and public affairs. Really.
I was distracted staring at Joe's Cold Oatmeal.
Yeah, well, it's here.
He's got it on his
desk. It's always here. It's always here.
And by the way, the ratio of like fruit to disgusting, like 1 to 10, it's got some disgusting stuff in some fruit. Yeah,
there's nothing disgusting.
One part
What in there is disgusting?
I don't even know what's in it, but it looks like cucumber mash. Maybe a couple of chopped apples.
Did you have Burger King for breakfast? What was your...
Say that!
Okay, welcome back. You're listening to the Cold Oatmeal podcast from the Resch Strategies team. We are a public affairs and public relations firm based in Lansing, Michigan. And this is episode 16. And this one is going to be wild. We are going to... There are so many moving pieces planned right now. This is a trapeze act that may be brilliant, or it may be catastrophic.
It's going to be rough.
We will see. We've never done anything like this before. There are more people in the studio right now than we've ever had before. I think there are...
Seven of us.
Seven. It's packed. It's hot. We're going to see how this goes. We also have you probably heard in our intro, our friend Chris Harkins, sitting in the guest hosting chair with us today. Also want to give a special thanks to Brian Westren and Pete Mowry of westrenandmowry.com. They are a musical group based here in mid-Michigan that help us with music for the podcast. And also want to thank Nick Piazza at nickpiazza.com. He too has supplied us with some music for the podcast. So today our guest is a great guest. You know, Megan Holland was on the original list of guests that we put together about a year ago when we started to think about this podcast and who we wanted to have on. Megan was one of those, I think the first 12 people we put on the list. You were one of the very first ones. And I think we've been trying to schedule this ever since. It feels like been going back and forth for weeks trying to find a date that we can get you here. So
I feel honored. I was part of the first dirty dozen.
Yeah. We've gotten to most of them. So there are a couple left. But I'm grateful that you could be with us.
Yeah, thanks for finally making the time for us.
Yeah absolutely. Yeah.
So for those who don't know, I probably think most people who listen probably do, but Megan has done, has had a pretty impressive and diverse career, starting in the journalism realm as the Capital Bureau Chief for Booth Newspapers from 1990 to 2007. Moved over to Grand Rapids, where she was the online editor at the Grand Rapids Press. Helped to launch MLive, the first all-digital news hub in Lansing. Moved over to state government, worked for both the Secretary of State and Governor Snyder for a while. Now She is the Vice President of Communications and Marketing for the Michigan Retailers. She also has an impressive list of accomplishments when it comes to Lansing and the community, both with her work in Old Town, but also economic development. And there are so many things that we wanted to try to talk to you about. We couldn't pick a topic. Usually we have people in here to talk about one thing. There are about 16 different things we could talk to you about. So we're gonna try something new. And if you're cool with this, we're gonna play a little game.
I'm down.
You're good?
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's go.
Let's play Topic Twister with Megan Holland.
Okay, so welcome to Topic Twister with Megan Holland.
Here we go.
Let's get rolling. Nikki is the holder and spinner of the wheel. Nikki, first topic.
Okay. Got right hand red.
Your topic is Chris Harkins' favorite journalism movie.
So, well, this is awkward.
So, Megan, what do you think?
Our first topic is not for our first guest. It's for Chris Harkins. So, Chris Harkins, what is your favorite journalism movie? We talked with Shana Roth. We've had many conversations about our favorite journalism movies. What is your favorite journalism movie?
Oh, that's a tough question. Does it have to be really about journalism, or can it just be a
Not
movie
really.
That involves We've newspapers?
Mine was Crocodile Dundee, so
Superman
2. Barometer.
Fine. My goodness. My favorite journalism movie. I really don't know. I think I'd have to reach back to something like, what do we go with, like,
can
an Orson Welles sort
nominees?
Of thing here? I mean, you could go
Citizen
back
Kane?
To Citizen Kane. That'd be a good.
That's your era.
It is my era. It's it's just the right amount of color for me.
Right.
Black and white suits me well. So I guess I'd go that route. Just for the rosebud alone.
Well, good. We should probably talk to our guest, though. But so, Nikki, give us another spin.
I'm so sorry.
Way to go for a spin.
Right foot green.
Your topic is Hans Off.
Oh, Hans Braun. Our painter friend.
Our painter, yes.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
you're really throwing me for a loop.
That's why we're exactly.
I know that name. It sounds very German. Yes, I spent a lot of time with Hans.
So Megan and I share a house painter.
Yes.
And I think you put it on Facebook a while back when you moved and needed a house painter, and I recommended Hans. Hans is, what was the term? Do you remember the term you used to describe Hans? Like your how did you put it? It was kind of like your philosophical soulmate or something like that. Hans will paint and talk.
Yes.
And talk and paint.
Yes. And
whether
he
you're
doesn't
in the room or not.
Use any covering on the floor when he paints, which made me very nervous, but he never dripped a drop. So, yeah, he's an amazing guy.
He is such.
Thank you for that recommendation.
He was awesome. I wish I had more things to paint at my house because I would have him come all the time. He's very funny.
Yep.
And, you know, his partner, Rick. They're both talkers, and I would always laugh because Hans would be up on a ladder talking, and Rick would just get down and walk away, and Hans would never even know that he was gone, and he would just keep talking, and Rick would just kind of come back in and pick it right up where Hans never knew he was even gone.
Good guys.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
Wow.
Oh, we should have had a table.
Nikki, spin the wheel.
Right hand green.
The next topic is Flip Side.
Okay, so you had a transition at one point, Flip Side, from the world of journalism to the world of PR flack, mm-hmm. going into state government, I think, first off the bat. Talk us through a little bit. You know, you were a journalist for a long time. How did that transition work for you? What did you
Not
did
as
you learn?
Easily as I thought it would.
Really?
You know, I think a lot of journalists think, journalism, you do have a lot of transferable skills. You need to write fast. You're deadline driven. You can usually talk to people really well. Obviously, you're interviewing people. So there's a ton of great skills that a journalist has. But if you think you're just going to plop into marketing or public relations or crisis management, that ain't going to happen easily. You know, those are, you know, very specific skills in and of themselves. And I remember I got some great advice from a friend who owns a PR firm in Grand Rapids. I showed her my first draft of my resume after I was laid off from MLive. And I had crisis management on there because I was one of the editors that led the Roderick Dantzler coverage. I don't know if you recall that incident, but he was a gentleman who shot 7 people in one day. And he was driving all over Grand Rapids doing it. I mean, they were shutting down Little League games and diverting buses. It was an amazing day. And I thought, well, that's crisis management. And my PR friend said, no, Megan, you don't know what crisis management is. And I thought, I trust this woman. I am taking that off my resume. And thank God I did, because the last thing you want to do is oversell yourself on a resume. So, yeah, the transition, it's not an easy one to make. But if you can roll with the punches, and God knows I think I've rolled 6 times since I left him live, you can make it happen.
Was it something you always saw yourself doing, or was it just a victim of the circumstance of what changes at MLive and looking for something?
Yeah,
next,
you know, I thought I would. Journalism was my life. I thought I would retire from journalism, but I also knew the way MLive was going that it was inevitable. You know, so I was mentally and emotionally prepared to be laid off. And also, by that time in my life, so much life experience had happened that you really do have life in a lot better perspective. And so it wasn't the end of the world when I was laid off.
Any advice to a journalist now, maybe looking at the end of a career or an end of a job?
Well, funny you say that, because I just spent last weekend with a friend who was an MLive journalist over at Grand Rapids. They just bought out a bunch of journalists. And, you know, a lot of these journalists are in their 50s and thinking, oh my God, what do I do now? And luckily, they're being bought out into a pretty good economy. So that helps a lot. But yeah, you can't write the traditional resume anymore. You've really got to change that up and focus on skills rather than job titles, because the job titles don't mean anything anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, just practice interviewing. Come up with questions you think you're going to hear in an interview and be prepared with some answers. And bizarrely, this sounds so cheesy, but be yourself. You know, just take deep breaths before you go into that interview and just be yourself. I know it sounds corny as heck, but
it's good life advice as well.
Yeah.
Nikki, give it a spin.
Left foot yellow.
The next topic is hashtag fake news.
There's nothing that upsets me more. It's hurt me and I think a lot of journalists to the core that this has come about. And I even have a family member who believes that if a story has a byline, that means the story is biased. And I try to explain, no, that means that reporter is being held accountable for the facts in the story. But I think our whole perspective of journalism has been turned on its head. And I really feel so sad for the journalists who are working their keisters off out there every day under the most high-pressured circumstances, and they're being questioned at every turn. I had the luxury of working in journalism when it still had a lot of credibility. We may not have been beloved as a profession, mm-hmm. but it still had a lot of credibility. So this really makes me sad.
Do you, if the world of journalism was a patient and you had to like give it a diagnosis, like how healthy do you think it is right now in 2018? How would you diagnose journalism?
If I look at it from the journalist perspective, I think it's very healthy. There's a ton of experimentation. And as I say, journalists are working hard. They're learning new digital techniques at every turn. I mean, there were days at MLive where I thought my head was going to explode because it was one more new thing you had to learn. But you come to thrive on it. And in fact, you know, one of the things about transitioning to another workplace is the pace likely is a lot slower than what you would experience in journalism. So, so I think from my perspective, it's still very healthy, but the public's perspective, yeah, they're getting ready for electric shock treatment. So.
Nikki, give it a spin.
Right foot red.
The next topic is the M life.
Talk about the transition from print journalism. You had a bit of a transition, I think, into online with Grand Rapids Press, but then the full into MLive, your work in the Lansing Bureau with MLive and being 100% digital all the time and both as a journalist who had been working in the print side and kind of had to transition, but also bringing in maybe younger reporters who had never had to do the print side before?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you this. I was a bit unusual because I did work in the Lansing Bureau for the 8 Booth newspapers for 17 years. So actually, I hadn't been really tied to a print product. It was more of a wire service. And then when I moved to Grand Rapids, I was strictly online. And I mean, the difference, frankly, between Capital reporting and online reporting in Grand Rapids was I went from stories about policy and politicians. By the way, I also oversaw professional sports coverage there, so it was a very varied bureau. Mm-hmm. But then when I went to online in Grand Rapids, it was fires, it was tornadoes, it was traffic accidents. You know, it was just constant breaking news and just getting it up on the web as quickly as you could. What was heartening back in that day is that what got up on the web was really high quality. It was still edited. We hadn't flattened the editor ranks yet. When we went to M Live, those ranks got flattened a bit, and so the editing wasn't quite as prevalent. And now it's even less prevalent. And that's not just M Live. It's probably just about every news organization that's online. But I also will say, when I moved from Lansing in 2007 to Grand Rapids and I walked into that newsroom, I was stunned because everybody in there was so old. And I thought, this is not good. I mean, I'm another old person joining the ranks here. They need young people. And so I know that the transition to MLive was really traumatic for some of the more experienced journalists, but it had to happen. We needed young blood to remain relevant.
Where do you see, what's the kind of the next chapter? I mean, because you've mentioned a couple of MLive is going through transitions again right now, mm-hmm. some pretty tough ones. What do you see as kind of the next chapter in this digital journalism, online journalism realm?
I see some more monetization of some editorial products, maybe, probably more on the entertainment side. But, you know, as good storytelling is still good storytelling. And look at what the Lansing State Journal has done with the Larry Nassar coverage.
Right.
Pretty amazing stuff. And MLive, you know, the Grand Rapids Press, won Newspaper of the Year. I mean, they're still putting out really good journalism. But you have to have an editor who says to a reporter, take the time to do the story right. Oh, and by the way, all the rest of you still need to keep churning those stories up onto the web. So you got to find that right balance.
Nikki?
Right foot blue.
Dream jobs.
Of all the jobs you've had, what has been your favorite one?
I loved M Live. I really did. I loved the vibe of just trying something so totally new and experimental, and thinking that maybe we would get through several years without having to go through layoffs. That was naive on my part. But I will also say that one of my all-time favorite jobs was being entertainment editor back in the 80s at the Grand Rapids Press. And it was a blast, and it really was the precursor to me being able to figure out how to book music at Creel Gallery. Because, you know, as a journalist, I had good instincts about what people would want to read about. But what I found in music is I had good instincts about what people wanted to listen to. So it's amazing how your avocation can really feed into your vocation and vice versa. But also, I'll say, and this is where I tell young people, it's important to network, because I met so many different people through my avocation, and it totally paid off for me when it came time for me to find a job after I was laid off. And, you know, I didn't network for networking's sake. I networked because I'm a social animal. But it was just amazing. I think I got some of my jobs after journalism just as much for my reputation at the Creel as for what I was doing as a journalist.
Well, we have a question about the Creel. Hopefully the wheel will stop on it here before we get done. Nikki, give it a spin. Pressure's on.
Left foot red.
The moment.
What is the moment, let's see, the most memorable moment that you covered as a reporter?
You know, it's kind of sad that I wasn't a reporter for longer. I became an editor at age 25, which was ridiculous. Nobody should be an editor at 25. But at the time, I was working in Gannett, and they were really in this mode of, we've got to promote women. And I benefited totally from that era in Gannett and became an editor very young. So that's actually a big regret of my journalism career. But as far as, you know, so I can tell you from an editor standpoint, as a reporter, what I did is I missed a lot of really big stories. I slept through a shipwreck right outside my bedroom window. I'm not kidding. Well,
let's take a pause from the wheel. I think you have to tell that story.
Yeah.
Well, I was at the Port Huron Times Herald, and I was living on the St. Clair River, and there was two huge 1,000-footers crashed because it was really foggy, and you'd get so attuned to the foghorns when you live in that area that I just didn't wake up, and they crashed, and the police reporter covered it, and well, it was right outside my window. And then when I was at the Greenville Daily News, a hotel burned down a block from where I lived, and I never heard the sirens. I slept through that. So,
must be a strong sleeper.
I'm not really. I'm very restless, but apparently I do have my deep moments.
You defy stereotypes, though. The typical stereotype, you know, there's an accident, everybody's, you know, running down with their notepad, but
yeah, not me, I'm not sleeping.
You, right. Need a nap.
Is this the part of the podcast brought to you by NyQuil?
Nice job.
You are a natural.
How about as an editor, if working with a reporter, is there a moment in time?
That Roderick Dantzler story. I mean, it was such an extraordinary story where literally a guy was driving around shooting women who he loved, who were, mother of his children kind of thing, and one of the women's parents, and then he shot a guy at random in the face, and the guy amazingly survived. But we could literally hear the sirens go right past the Grand Rapids Press while we're covering the story.
When was this?
This was in 2006, maybe? I have no excuse for not remembering. I'm sorry. It would have been after 2007, so it would have been maybe 2010? But the amazing thing was, it was just an exhausting story, and we worked on it until the wee hours of the morning and dragged our butts back into the paper the next day. And I just had an incredible sinus infection at the time. And I remember going home at like 6 o'clock and thinking, oh God, I get to finally go to bed. And then Betty Ford died. And that was that. Because of course, Gerald R. Ford is from Grand Rapids. And yeah. So we all went back into the newspaper and that was an extraordinary story because the video footage alone is amazing of him driving the wrong way on the freeway and police are showing it through their video cameras. So
it's a shame you didn't have that Betty Ford stuff already, like, pre-taken
care
of.
There were some stories, but of course, yeah.
Just real quick, we can edit this part out, but has anyone seen the Dana Carvey sketch where he's being Tom Brokaw and he's reading, like, all these potential fake news stories, and it's all these Gerald Ford died today scenarios. And it's like, Gerald Ford was eaten by wolves, died at the age of 78. And he's going through like 30 of them. Sure done that.
Yeah.
Okay, Nikki, give it a spot.
Okay, I spun already. Oh, okay. It's Left Foot Blue.
Megan Holland's favorite journalism movie.
Broadcast news. I was prepared for that. I loved Holly Hunter in that film. And there were just so many classic bits where Albert, what's his name? The guy who sweat to death on camera. And William Hurt was in it. And it was just such a great movie about how TV was going for this transition from serious news to more sensational news. Classic scenes in it.
Nikki? Oh, good spin. Good spin.
Best of the day.
Thank you. I'm improving. Left Hand Yellow.
Spin again.
Okay. We have 16 topics, but only came up with 15. Oh. So one of them is spin again.
Right Hand Yellow.
Chris Harkins is better than Bob Olson.
That's not really a topic. I just wanted to get that on record of Chris actually saying that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Spin it again. Maybe.
Right hand blue.
Last meal.
Your favorite place in Lansing to get a good meal.
That's a much cheerier approach than I thought you were taking.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, really. You know, I guess I'd have to say the Creole. Am I totally biased?
No, you can be biased.
You know, I mean, actually, people wonder how can you go back there, but I made a point when Robert died that I would never hesitate to go back there because that building has just the coolest vibe, and I didn't ever want to lose touch with that. So, yeah, the Creole. And I like their new burger menu. I think it's great.
We went as a team a couple weeks ago, and it was solid. Mm-hmm. Very solid.
Today's episode of the Cold Oatmeal Podcast, brought to you by The Creole. How's that?
I like
that. It was better than Bob Olson.
It was a little tinny.
No, I'm just kidding.
Harsh.
Still got that Midwest nasal.
I think the Creole and Hans Braun have both gotten great advertisements out of this.
That's right. Yes. The Hans is so busy, he doesn't even take new clients anymore.
Right.
Okay, give it a spin, Nikki. We have not had a left hand yet. Is the wheel weighted wrong?
Yeah. Right foot yellow.
The next topic is Bureau Chief.
So talk about kind of the evolution of the Capitol Press Corps from the time that you were the Bureau Chief from 1990 to 2007. That's a long time. A lot of changes have happened during that period.
Yeah, in 1990 we had 24 people in the Bureau. Can you believe it?
Just in the booth?
Well, you know, we had three people in Washington that the Bureau was in charge of. We had five sports reporters, five covering the professional sports in Detroit. If you know anything about professional baseball, you really need two baseball writers because that season is so exhausting to cover. And then we had an MSU sports reporter, and we had an outdoor writer and an arts critic, and then we had copy editors, and then all the other reporters covered state government, the bureaucracy, the campaigns, the legislature. So it was a vast array of wonderfully talented journalists, with whom I was privileged to work, and then it started shrinking. And so, you know, an editor friend of mine likes to say that we're about the same age, and he became an editor about the same time I did. And he says, I saw nothing but the shrinkage of journalism under my editing tenure. You know, just he managed shrinkage, and I get it. It's sad. And by the time we were done, it was Peter Luke and me in the Bureau, and then I moved to Grand Rapids. So we all said about Peter, he's just Jack Nicholson in the old bumping around this big old building because we were in a very old house on Sycamore Street.
I've often thought that about Peter.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy.
I love Peter.
So do you ever all 25 of you ever get together? I mean, do you have reunions? I know that some of them they're probably now they're PR folks. They're retired. They're probably
Sharon Emery was with Truscott Rossman and Kathy Bloomer actually is with is John Truscott's right-hand woman. And, people have gone on to really good careers. We did have a reunion a couple years ago. Ed Hoogterp, who was our features writer, is running for state rep up north now.
Wow.
Which is an interesting He's a drain commissioner there. So who would have thought, you know, how you're going to land? Life takes a lot of left turns.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this one will.
Oh, ho.
What do you know? It is left hand red.
The next topic is Royal Rumble.
Yes, Stephanie finally gets to talk.
Yay. You and I are both big fans of the Royal Wedding. What do you think of everything happening?
No, I think you're being way too hard on Meghan Markle is what I think.
Okay, so the rules of this question are, so do you know what a Royal Rumble is? In the wrestling world?
I was going to say, is that a WWE term?
It is. It's what, like 30 people?
30 people.
30 wrestlers get into the ring, and they all fight. And they try to throw people out of the ring, and the last person standing is the winner of the Royal Rumble. So if there were, and I'm looking at now Megan and Stephanie to carry this conversation, if there were a Royal Rumble today of the royal family, and we can include fiancés if we want to get Meghan in there, because she's probably, she's a dirty fighter, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Stephanie's opinions of her are holding true. We put the whole royal family into a wrestling ring. Who is standing at the end?
Oh. Like in terms of just
They've picked other people up and thrown them over the top rope and are standing, left standing.
Is the only people that are still alive?
Think about it. Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah. She can get people up over the rope.
She's a survivor, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, and also people aren't allowed to physically touch her.
That's a good point. There's the loophole.
Not
in the
even
game.
Prince Philip.
Nope.
So that strategy would be walking towards her opponents and watching them heave themselves out of the
exactly. Right.
She could probably just tell them, jump over the top rope.
Exactly, and they'd have to obey her command.
And she has all those corgis, you know, they might might defend her pretty well.
Yeah, though not as much anymore because she had to get rid of them as they're a trip and fall hazard for her. And so her last one passed away.
Well, you are a royal fan. Oh, my God.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so she just had to get rid of the last one. It's been very painful.
Who tells her what to do? What do you mean she had to?
Well, she has a court of advisors. And so there's a staff and a group of women and men in waiting. And so they...
Your Majesty, we really think it's time.
Well, can
time.
She
you're
say
gonna
no?
You're going to trip over spot.
Can't she just dictate the instructions to her?
She could probably have said
hey,
no.
Guess
the
what?
The way Trump did his medical report?
I'm the queen and I'm going to have a dog.
Yeah, but her responsibility is to remain healthy for her...
For her subject.
She's like 100. Can't she just sort of, who cares at this point? I'm going to have my dogs.
Well, she could.
That sounds like something that came out of the White House recently about John McCain. I mean...
Who's next in
line?
We
love John McCain.
Who's
we love Queen Elizabeth.
Prince Charles.
Prince Charles is next in line. But I
so he could buy her a dog and just speed the process up.
Right.
The thing is that the monarchy is kind of precariously balanced right now. I think that there are a lot of people who are not fans of Prince Charles. And so the Queen is interested in hanging on as long as she possibly can until the family is a little more popular and a little more stable. Is that your take?
I think they're pretty popular right now, don't you? They've rebounded from the Princess Diana period.
I think that, yes, by
Camilla's
and large,
been
they
more
are.
Accepted. But I can tell right now, I'm not half the fangirl you are when it comes to royals. Yeah, you've got it all over me.
Well, I just think that Prince Charles in particular, there was a book that came out about him this past summer that was really unflattering. He comes across as kind of a whiner. And so I think that there are a lot of people there's been talk over the last couple of years about skipping him and going right to William. And so I think she would like to be a little bit more hang on until things settle down.
What's that process like? How do you skip Prince Charles?
You don't.
Would there be a coup?
You plant a corgi under his
feet. Right. Yeah, also, no one wants to be the queen that died from falling
over a
corgi.
A dog.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we have time for one more spin.
What?
Chris, left foot, because I can make it happen.
Chris, what one do you want to read?
I don't care whichever
do
one
left
you
foot
want.
Green.
Left foot green, okay.
The final question. Old Town, New Town.
So I want to talk, and you mentioned a little bit about Creole. You were there, I don't know if I want to say at the beginning, but have been an integral part of the kind of the rebirth of Old Town with the Creole Gallery. And I'm going to merge two questions because I was really I was hoping we could land on Left Hand Blue.
Just tell me.
But
help me out.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the Creole Gallery. I wanted dying to know who the best concert was that you had come to the Creole Gallery, in your opinion, and how you've seen Old Town kind of transition over these years.
Yeah, well, best concert, Wynton Marsalis. You know, I mean, it just put Creole on the map in all of lower Michigan, I think, and tremendously helped us step up our game. And
did that happen the night after he played at MSU?
You know, I think he was between concerts in Chicago and Interlochen.
Okay.
And these jazz guys just want to play all the time. So he said to Rodney Whitaker, find me a place to play. I can't sit around for 2 days between concerts. I've got to play. So Rodney directed him to us, and it was fantastic. And I remember Robert and I we announced the concert, and we kept thinking, please, dear God, this is going to happen, right? I mean, it was so fantastical for us. We weren't sure it was actually going to happen. But we sold out within an hour, and then we just prayed to God that Wynton Marsalis showed up. And he did, and he did four shows in 2 nights. An interesting fact about Wynton Marsalis, he has vertigo, And if you ever attended a concert at the Creole, it had a very high stage. So that was kind of a difficult thing for him. But, yeah, it was amazing.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And as far as, you know, the transition of Old Town, man, you know, when we started out and 19 people showed up at our first concert, and, you know, we lost our shirts on it. And it was hard to get people down to old. We're talking late 90s. It was hard to get people down to Old Town after dark. It had a reputation of prostitutes on the corner and wild, you know, just everybody remembered the Mustang Bar, even though it had been closed by that point. A lot of homeless people, drug dealers, that was the reputation. I don't think it was as unsafe as people thought. But, you know, our job was trying to lure people down there after dark and come to our concerts. And it kept growing and growing over time, and then Wynton Marsalis happened and it exploded. Meanwhile, Robert Busby, who owned the Creole and four other buildings, just was not a greedy landlord. And this is what hurts a lot of commercial districts, is landlords who don't want to work with people who are looking to start up a business. And Robert was willing, if he thought somebody came to him and had a cool idea for a retail store, and he wasn't going to rent to offices, he wanted retail on those first floors, he was willing to start out paying their utilities, helping them build out, and just nurture them until they got on their feet. And there was a lot of churn at first, but eventually Real World was a store that catered to the LGBT community, and that was another landmark for Old Town in that it attracted LGBT folks from all over southern Michigan. It was so unique, and it attracted more people with money, frankly, and I would say at one point maybe 50% of the businesses in Old Town, in stores that weren't boarded up, were gay-owned, which is so cool, and it really helped Old Town start going into new directions and attracted more money and, frankly, retailers who knew what they were doing, because we would get people who would start up a store and have no clue how to run a business, or they were totally undercapitalized. But that's the slow growth period of a neighborhood getting back on its feet. Mm-hmm. And by the time Robert died, we still didn't have a destination restaurant. But man, once Meat moved in, and then the Creole and Zubies and Cosmo, I mean, it just took off.
Yeah. No, it's come a really long way. And I appreciate you coming a long way to come and and talk with us during our little, and humoring us with Topic Twister with Megan Holland.
I've never played Topic Twister before. And Chris, you have a great radio voice.
I've heard it's better than Bob Olson's.
I've heard the same thing. In fact, it says so on red hand yellow. But.
Good deal. Well, thanks, Megan, for stopping by.
I loved it. Thank you.
You bet. You're listening to the Cold Oatmeal Podcast.
Did anyone else pick up the issue about shrinkage?
I was in the pool! I was in the pool!
I think we all heard it.
Oh, yeah, the shrinkage,
yeah,
totally.
It was really hard not to laugh.
I had to push the mute button over here.
I'm not adult enough for that.
Yeah. I should have had that as a topic on the wheel. But we didn't.
Shrinkage.
I don't know about that.
Your next topic.
When you know it's just going to come up naturally, you don't need to put it on the wheel. So this does beg the question: what is? I saw on the internet one of those clickbait things that make you click 100 times to see the top 25 things, and you get frustrated trying to get to the end of it. But the best Seinfeld episode. You are a fan, Mr. Harkins.
Yes, I am a fan.
You have a favorite?
You know, there's a lot of good episodes. I like, you can't go wrong with, like, the puffy shirt. I mean,
that was number one.
That's a great
episode. That was number one on the list.
It's in the Smithsonian, right? It has the puffy shirt, which I feel like is a little nuts, but, you know, whatever. Yeah. We'll take it.
I don't think there's a bad episode. I think they're all, even, like, the really early ones are funny, but that one doesn't grab me. It's okay. I mean, it's good, but
I feel number one is a bit overrated for the puffy shirt.
Yeah. I really like the one where Kramer gets swept up in the crowd of business people and then gets a job, and he's carrying like crackers in his briefcase. Yeah.
That's a great one.
I'm sorry, Mr. Kramer, you're fired. But I don't even work here.
Right. And
that's what makes it so difficult.
It's true. It's a great line.
But, you know, there is one I don't like, and I really do have a problem where they're waiting in the Chinese restaurant. I find that episode so upsetting.
Really?
That, yeah, oh. That I can't.
Why? That was a groundbreaking episode of television.
That was one of the, I think, the top five on the list.
Yeah.
What's your issue with it?
I get frustrated by it.
Are you offended on behalf of Chinese restaurant patrons? Or?
No, I get upset because I've been in that situation, and I just find myself like, just leave, just get out of there.
You know, I love the one with the shoes. The Jimmy's got the pair of shoes, and we end up with Mel Torme.
Jimmy's getting upset.
We end up with Mel Torme and Kramer at a benefit concert, which is
are they allowed to air that one in 2018?
Probably. I'm sure someone's griping about it, but
right. It's fantastic.
It is.
I wonder if they go back in syndication as, I mean, this would be a horrible, sad commentary, but if they apply 2018 sensibilities on syndication, and do you think they pull things out of rotation?
I actually think there is a scene from an episode, and I can't remember what the episode is, that is no longer like on TV, but Jerry's having a fantasy about something happening in his apartment. He's like running away from the cops, and he gets like shot down by this group.
It's the cable TV when he's stealing
cable.
Cable.
TV. Okay. I do not think that is on TV anymore. Like that's, you have to own the DVDs to.
Well,
see,
and
that.
I heard a conversation on the radio yesterday about how the first couple seasons of The Office, there's no way that The Office would be on TV at all.
Well, and Friends, to your point, I mean, Friends there is a lot of stuff that people are upset about.
Nikki, what's your favorite episode
of Seinfeld?
Yeah.
I've never watched Seinfeld. Nothing to say.
What's your favorite episode of Friends?
We're not talking about Friends.
Oh,
Well, we're going to
really
be
like I really like the game show episode where they have like a lightning round.
Where they have the topic twister and they spin the wheel and they ask people questions.
Is that the one where Kramer finds the set behind the studio?
It's
oh my gosh,
Seinfeld.
That one was so great.
That is.
Oh, hey!
Animals in the apartment, too.
Joining us today is Jerry Seinfeld. Like Jerry, have a seat.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Yeah. We should have a lightning round on here. We could compete.
Yeah. Lightning round.
You got to come up with the topics.
Right.
Okay. Well, how do you think on a scale of 1 to 10, how does topic twister, Joe?
I think it's going to work. I think it's tough to
pull it off.
It's tough to know now, and it's funny to talk about it now when this will be a complete episode when the people hear this, but I think it's going to work. I think it was a good idea.
Nikki? How would you?
I enjoyed it.
You enjoyed it?
I like being the spinner.
Well, we should do this again. If we have another, we should have a regular rotation of topic twister.
Next time, let's get poor Nikki a table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was all big talk, but I don't need a table.
I don't need a
I'm
table
just going to put
I
the wheel on my
up.
Lap. And you dropped it. The wheel didn't turn.
I was really upset the entire time. I have to tell you, I was really worried that you were going to spin and it get the same thing twice.
I was trying to think through my head, what do I do if she lands on the same thing twice?
Well, we had a professional handling the read.
That's right.
I'm sure he
was. Yeah, we probably just would have picked a different one.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I just started making them up at the end.
No.
We needed.
What?
Do you need left?
You were complaining so much about left feet.
Yeah, you were.
If that's the case, can I suggest that every episode start with a question about me, uncomfortably?
Yes. Absolutely.
Done. Okay. Thank you, Chris, for being here. Megan.
Sure.
Thanks for stopping by, Nikki. Thanks for spinning the wheel.
You
Joe,
betcha.
Thanks for working your editing magic on the Topic Twister episode number 16. You've been listening to the Cold Oatmeal Podcast from the Rest Strategies team, and we will talk to you again next time.